From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Hello. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We have got a fabulous show for you today. Coach Pete Carroll, head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, will join us to play Not My Job. But first, as the week ended, we got the news that BP seems to have finally capped the Gulf oil well, if it all works out. This is great news for pretty much everybody, man and fish alike. But we can't help feeling a certain sense of loss, because BP had given us really what we today in these times so much needed, a villain, complete with an effete British Bond villain of a CEO who went off to yacht races after destroying the Earth. Sure, you know, so we'll go back to hating on things like mime, Gwyneth Paltrow, you know. But it won't be the same. The only good news, really, is that knowing BP as we do now, we can be certain that soon they will utterly destroy something else. But until that happens, we've still got each other. Give us a call to play our game. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. It's Aaron Ambrosino from Clifton Park, New York.
Oh, you're up there in upstate New York. What do you do up there?
I'm in sales.
Okay, you sell stuff. Isn't it true that when you're I've heard this, that when you're a salesman, you're really selling yourself?
Yeah, that's true, yes.
So why should I buy you?
I actually have no idea why you should.
There you go. Well, welcome anyway. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. Aaron, first say hello to a television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca, right there.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Aaron.
Next is a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor is right here.
Hi.
And finally, it's a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and the author of the new book, out in paperback, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hey, Aaron.
So, Aaron, welcome to the show. Let's get started with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, of course, is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that two times out of three. You win our prize, Carl's voice on your voicemail. Ready to go?
Absolutely.
Here we go. This is actually from a court ruling issued this week, an actual legal excerpt. It sent shockwaves through the broadcasting industry.
The digestive system and excretion are also important areas of human attention.
So that federal appeals court decision decided that the FCC can no longer fine people for what?
Profanity?
Exactly. Or fleeting obscenity is the rule. So let's say you're entertaining at the Super Bowl halftime show, like so many of us have. And you happen to be standing next to Janet Jackson, and she's wearing some kind of metal bra, and you say to yourself, as anyone would, hey, let's see what's under that. Well, good news, an appeals court has now said the FCC can't fine broadcasters for that kind of, quote, fleeting obscenity. Things that are obscene but are unplanned, that kind of action or an exclamation of joy or disgust. This means, of course, that we no longer have to have Carl Castle on an 8-second delay.
Damn straight, Peter.
And now that I think back on my life, almost everything obscene I've ever done was both fleeting and unplanned.
There you are. Funny that you mention it. I spent most of my adolescence planning obscenities, but they never happened. It was frustrating. Anyway, it does free Carl up, like we said. Right after the decision was handed down, Carl recorded a brand new voicemail greeting for one of our winners.
Stay on this phone and don't hang up on me. I have plenty of energy to drive over there. You understand me? So just listen to me.
I actually thought I worked on the only radio program in America that wasn't going to run the Mel Gibson games.
Oh, well. Very good. Your next quote comes from White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs.
I think I did what is maybe uncommon in this town, and yesterday I opened my mouth and stated the obvious.
Gibbs was apologizing, sort of, for saying what might happen in the fall elections?
Ooh, that's a good one. The Democrats might lose?
Exactly right. And let me tell you something. His saying that made the Democrats in the House really mad at him. Mr. Gibbs went on to infuriate Nancy Pelosi and the other congressional Democrats by saying other true but impolite things like, no, the dress doesn't make you look fat. Your fat makes you look fat. Here's the problem for the Democrats. They are in trouble for the fall. And the problem is that things are bad. And their only hope is to convince the voters that things would have been worse if the Republicans were in charge. So what they need is kind of an It's a Wonderful Life scenario. They're staking their election in the hope that this frumpy, charming angel will descend to show all of America what life would have been like if Obama had never been born.
Hello, movie house!
Exactly.
Hello, you wonderful old savings and loan scandal!
Exactly. You know, they're walking around this horrible place, and the angry neighbor's like, this isn't America, it's Cheneyville! Don't you think I know where I live? And then, you know, it's all restored, and Obama is back, and everything's great, and everybody's grateful. It's like, that's right, Zuzu. Every time a bell rings, a child gets indoctrinated into socialism. Ding, ding.
Hey, get me. I'm giving out tax breaks.
Aaron, your last quote is from a man who was talking about his former boss, a man who passed away this week.
The phone would ring in the middle of the night, and you knew it was either him or a death in the family. And after a while, you started to root for a death in the family.
Who was that beloved boss who died?
George Steinbrenner.
Exactly right. The legendary owner of the Yankees died this week at the age of 80, and I hope you'll grant me a moment to be serious about this, because nobody, but nobody in my memory did more than Steinbrenner for our beloved national pastime. And by that, I mean hating the New York Yankees.
Yes.
Why? Without Steinbrenner, Yankee hating would have become empty, pointless, an antique sport like harness racing or lawn tennis. But with Steinbrenner making the Yankees the most obnoxious, tyrannical, bloated, purely evil sports franchise since the disbanding of the Tampa Bay Devil Nazis, Yankee hating was revived, and whole new generations of fans have grown up to scream obscenities at the sight of a pinstripe. He may be gone, but I know I'll have Steinbrenner to thank when my little daughters look up at me someday and say, Papa, are the Yankees Satan's baseball team? And I will say, yes, sweetheart, why yes, they are. Thank you, George.
Lovely eulogy.
Thank you.
I never argue with a man who brings his own soundtrack.
I know, thank you. Carl, how did Aaron do in our quiz?
Aaron was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers, so he wins our prize.
Hey, Aaron.
Well done, Aaron. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks for playing, Aaron.
The Bambino, the Clipper, and the Met.
Donnie.
I'm talking baby.
Donnie,
Yankees baseball, the Clipper and
we want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, the New York Times reported on BP's long history of safety violations. It turns out they've been blowing stuff up for decades. But the company insists that safety is now job one. In fact, the CEO, Tony Hayward, recently instituted a rule preventing employees at BP from doing what?
Dating Bristol Palin.
That's...
the other BP.
The other safety.
Listen. Yeah. British Petroleum is an evil BP. Bristol Palin is a kind of a fun, distracting, silly
That's
BP.
That's true.
And both involved in drilling in their own way.
All right. Yes. And yes, but it's not Bristol's fault that the cap wasn't kept on the well. That was. That's Levi's.
No, it's nothing to do with Bristol Palin. Now, this goes back to the Grande French roast spill.
What, no more coffee?
Well, close.
I mean, no more drinking at your terminal and stuff?
You're close enough. Yeah. You're not allowed to walk down the hallway carrying hot coffee.
Walk down the hallway?
Yes, that's what they say. When Tony Hayward took the reins of BP in 2007, he pledged to fix the company's safety problems. And priority number one was avoiding unpleasant coffee burns. Priority number 400, not ruining the world. So at BP, many hallways at their headquarters have a sign imploring employees not to walk and carry coffee at the same time. Workplace hot beverage-related incidents are way down. So following the success of that coffee safety plan, crews are now posting signs on all their deep water wells saying, please do not spill all the oil into the ocean. Don't tell me, bluff the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Suzanne Marilli.
Hey, Suzanne, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Where are you calling from?
I'm in Bexley, Ohio, which is a suburb of Columbus.
A suburb of Columbus, so Columbus adjacent. What do you do there?
I'm a professor of political science at Capital University.
Oh, I haven't heard of Capital University. That's, I assume it's near Columbus, thus the capital?
It's near Columbus, that's right. The capital.
Yeah.
I've been here since the 1840s.
Really?
Wow, that's a long time. Do you have tenure yet? I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Suzanne, it's nice to have you with us. You are going to play the game with which you must tell truth from fiction. Carl, what's Suzanne's topic?
Get off the beach. Do you know how much that sand costs?
Summer's supposed to be when we have fun. Let our hair down. Let our tramp stamps dance on our muffin tops.
NPR tramp stamps. I can't believe it.
This week we heard about how the tough economic times have tightened even the belts on bikinis. Each of our panelists are going to tell you a story how somebody is trying to hold down the cost of summer fun. Only one of them is true. Ready to play?
Yes.
First, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
The recreational facilities along the Mequaminon River in northwestern Wisconsin consist of fishing, 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 and on rainy days, fishing! However, the cost of restocking the area's trout population has become prohibitive, so the people in charge of the Milcoxen Lake along the Mequaminon have created the world's first mechanical fishing hole. Anglers go out in search of remarkably lifelike animatronic prey with rods and lines that are tipped with a special radio transmitter. When the lure comes within range, a receiver within the fish picks it up, homes in on the angler, and gives him a fight for 15 or 20 minutes. So far, people seem to be reacting well to the competitive aspect of it, says Walter Weishoppel, the chairman of the La Follette County Fisheries Board. It's strictly catch and release, though. Even breaded, these things taste pretty bad.
Mechanical fish instead of stocking the rivers in Wisconsin. Your next story of summer fun on a budget comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Something is disappearing in Austria, and it's not the Wiener Schnitzel. Water is disappearing from public swimming pools faster than draperies at the Von Trapp house. Worse, authorities believe the water is going down the gullets of open-mouthed swimmers to the tune of 5,000 liters a day in the 18 pools. They're not worried about the swimmers. They're worried about the cost of water and the chemicals to treat it. So they're asking patrons to keep their tort holes shut while in the water. An earlier attempt to get guys to wear Speedos instead of board shorts, shorts soak up water, failed on aesthetic grounds. Maybe next they can try stocking the watering holes with 3-year-old boys who put water back in pools at an amazing rate.
The city fathers of Vienna asking swimmers not to open their mouths while swimming so as not to swallow water, which has to be paid for. Your last story of summer fun on a budget comes from Mo Rocca.
An amusement park should be fun for the whole family, Busch Gardens, the old country in Williamsburg, Virginia, is guaranteeing fun for most of the family this summer. The Old Europe-themed park is offering discounts to families who bring along immigrant grandparents to volunteer as park employees for the day. Quote, the consumer saves money, the park cuts costs, and grandparents reconnect with their homeland, says spokesman Derek Mackey. The Marucci family drove down from New Jersey with grandmother Antonia, who spent the day dressed as an Italian peasant woman, running screaming from an erupting Mount Vesuvius and dancing the tarantella. Granddad of four, Seamus O'Brien, dressed up as a tree for Busch Garden, Ireland's Main Street Druidical Parade. An 82-year-old Maria Dungu worked cleanup crew at the six-time-a-day musical extravaganza Lullaby of Tirana in the park's newly christened Little Albania section. Said Dungu wearily, I came to this country to provide my family with food. I've come to the old country to provide them with fun.
All right. Let us review your choices. From Charlie Pierce, real fish replaced with mechanical fish in Wisconsin to save money. From Kiri O'Connor, the city fathers of Vienna asking swimmers in their municipal pools to keep their mouths closed so as not to swallow the water and make off with it. Or from Mo Rocca, a deal that Busch Gardens offers, bring a grandparent, save on admission. Which of these is the real story of fun on a budget?
Wow. What a world we live in.
Ain't it something, though?
Run along and listen to the lullaby of Tirana.
Yeah.
Don't care.
I'm going to go with Charlie Pierce's Wisconsin fishing story.
You're going to go with Charlie Pierce's story of the mechanical fish to save money on actually having to provide real fish in Wisconsin. So that's your choice. Well, to bring you the real story, we spoke to somebody who was familiar with this story.
I've been covering the Olympics since 1984, and the notion that swimmers swallow pool water and therefore the pool is deprived of water, that just sounds ridiculous to me.
That was Christine Brennan. She is NPR's go-to Olympics reporter and a columnist for USA Today. So as you can no doubt figure out, Suzanne, Kiri O'Connor had the real answer.
Who could imagine that?
I like Kiri's solution about the three-year-old, though.
There you are.
Not only would that replace the water, but it would almost guarantee that once word got around, nobody would swallow the water.
Good.
She didn't win, but you did earn a point for Charlie for his very sophisticated and maybe even money-saving scheme.
Yes,
to save money for the fish stockers of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for playing.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. And now the game where we invite on winners and act like losers in front of them. In his 9 years as football coach at University of Southern California, Pete Carroll won 7 Pac-10 titles, 2 national championships, and just flat out won a whole lot of football games. This year, he became the head coach of the NFL Seattle Seahawks. He's got a new book out called Win Forever. Fine, his approach works in big-time college football, but can he raise his game to our level? Pete Carroll, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, I'm ready, man. Let's go.
Well, we got to ask you some questions first. Yeah, this is it's your philosophy, as you lay it out in your book, your philosophy you call Win Forever. You've developed it over a lifetime of coaching. And one of your theories, one of your maxims is always compete. And,
central theme in the program.
Right. And it's obviously appropriate when you're coaching football at the college or professional level. Are there any places, any times when it's like maybe okay not to compete?
No. Well, not. Yeah, sure. That's what we hope the other guys are doing.
Right. One of the things you talk about is when you're dealing with your players, you tell these stories. Is you try not to be negative. You try not to be the coach who yells and screams at their players. And that's been successful. But isn't that part of like the coach sort of stereotype? The mean guy, the Bear Bryant who yells at the players, or in one case hits them.
Well, it's all in the tone. It's how and when you do it. There's times to yell. I get excited and have fun as much as anybody. But most importantly is we're teachers, and what we transfer to them has got to help them learn. So if screaming is going to help them learn, then we'll scream. But for the most part, helping them know what they need to do next with the very next step they take is more important than just letting out a big old blurt and yell. But there's times now, I promise you, we get after them pretty good.
Really?
So you're trying to make it positive. Like, hey, next time it'll be really great if you don't screw that up again, for example.
There you go. That's close.
I'm getting there. All right. You were dealing with the elite athletes, both in college and in the NFL. These guys are either professional or going to be professionals, hoping to be professionals. These guys have been succeeding at a high level. What can you say, though, to make them give that extra mile? How can you get them? I mean, you could scare the hell out of me because I'm small and weak, but how do you get them
Here's the point. What you do, it's about the preparation during the week that gets you ready to play. And when you have guys that have put in their work, they've done their studying, the idea is to get them to feel that they don't have to worry about what's going to happen. They've been so well prepared. So when it gets to game time, you're just trying to keep their emotions going so that when they get on the field, they're at their very best. It really isn't the last words you say. It's more the release that you give them to freely play because they're so prepared. They're so jacked up. These guys love to play. They don't need to be kicked in the butt in the way you're talking about with a speech. They need to be prepared really well so that they're so excited to play. They go out there and play the game like they're capable. Now, that's what's really important. The worst thing you can do is tell somebody that they got to play the best game of their life, and that you don't know how to ever control that. We want our guys to play like they're capable of playing longer than the other guys and outlast our opponents, and that's going to win a lot of games for you because you're not beating yourself when you do that.
Right. Now, you mentioned the players being jacked up. I remember I have experience with football. I saw the movie musical Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, and there's a scene in the locker room where they're all getting ready, and they're just jubilant. I mean, they're singing, they're dancing, they're really excited, and they go out on the field, and I don't know what happens at that point, but is that sort of what it's like?
Singing and dancing.
That's much more like it.
Well, let him answer.
No, you have a much better feel than the other guy does. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, fine.
As Amos Alonzo Stagg once said to Pop Warner, it's all the show tunes.
Yeah, I know.
Now, the players, do they still do that thing where they put the black stuff under their eyes?
Yeah, you know, I never knew what that was all about. I'm glad you brought that up.
Because, yeah, I always wondered, because, I mean, do you put that on yourself, or do you get a friend to put it on for you, or is there, like, somebody on staff that's doing that, or?
It depends on the background of the guy.
Some of us bring our own.
That's right.
I've never understood. It's such a waste of time. Why don't they just tattoo a black square under each eye?
Well, as a matter of fact, they tape them on now. I don't get it at all.
They tape them on?
Yes. Yeah, with Bible verses and stuff.
Yeah,
well, I just want to say, I mean, I don't, well, can I say something about football?
You can say whatever you want, Mo.
That's what we're talking
about,
right?
He likes you best. Okay. Go ahead. You can do no wrong when it comes to Coach P.
Well, I just want to say that the one day I spent in JV football, I was very daunted by the big, tall, blue thing that you had to run into. And it just just the words of Coach Fagan ring in my head that when I ran towards it, and I guess I didn't hit it hard enough, and he said, I'm not your mother, and that's not your sister.
Future Seahawk play-by-play man, Mo Rocca today.
Are you worried? You've handled a lot of pressure. You've been in the NFL before. You were at USC, which is a pretty high-pressure environment for a coach. Now you're going to Seattle. Well, the whole region is going to be pinning their hopes on you. They've been disappointed before. Are you worried about this? Are you worried about what might happen this time? Or how are you going to handle it if you are?
Bring an umbrella.
If I was worried about it, I wouldn't be doing this. I'm excited about the opportunity and looking forward to it, you know, and the challenges of it. This is the highest level of competition you can get, and the way they've supported, you know, our change in the coaching staff and the way we're going after this thing is really special and unique, so I'm really pumped up about it, and we're going to take it as far as we can take it.
And just to, on that note, when you moved to Seattle, did you rent or buy?
I learned a long time ago, rent first.
Yeah, I guess so. One of the things that's different in NFL than in college is in college you're obviously responsible to an alumni community and the owner, not the, and the management of the university, the president, the athletic director. With football, you're generally responsible to one very rich guy who's gotten his own way his entire life.
You mean like Paul Allen, who started Microsoft?
For example, Paul Allen, who owns the Seahawks. You've dealt with other people, Robert Kraft, who owned the Patriots. Is there any strategy you need for dealing with extremely rich, powerful men?
Yeah, do whatever they say.
Yeah. Coach Pete Carroll, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
That was a great monkey shot with the five bar.
You are an acclaimed and successful football coach. You know everything there is to know about football, but change one letter and then where are you? We're going to ask you three questions about foosball.
Foosball?
Foosball. Foosball is the tabletop soccer game, you know, with the guys on the stick you turn.
It was my minor in college.
Was it really? Oh, yeah. All right. We're going to ask you three questions about that game. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Calls for us on their voicemail. Carl, who is legendary coach Pete Carroll playing for?
Pete is playing for Braxton Emmy of Youngsville, North Carolina.
All right. You ready to play?
Yeah, let's go, Braxton. Here we go.
All right. The game is called foosball, mostly here in the United States. Over in France, where some say the game was invented, it is called what? A, baby foot. B, conjoined soccer. Or C, homme très petit avec les boules très petites. Or tiny men with tiny balls.
That's D, Bob. Tiny men with tiny balls.
You're going to go with tiny men with tiny balls. You do spend time in locker rooms, I can tell. No, actually, it's baby foot, sadly, is what they call it. Baby foot, they call it in France. That's no problem. You still have two more chances to go, and I know you thrive in adversity. Now, here we go. Like any sport, foosball has its own slang. When somebody scores a cheap point against you, you're supposed to say what? You say, A, I hear birds, because birds go cheap, cheap. You say, B, you dinked my rod basket. Or you say, C, clapper trapper.
I'd say spin this.
Aha! No, it's one of those.
I go C.
You're going to go see clapper trapper?
Clapper trapper.
Guys in frat houses all over America are yelling clapper trapper at each other? You think?
I don't know. I'm going with it.
You're
going
to go with clapper trapper.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid it's I hear birds. You say I hear birds.
No way.
Birds
no are way.
It's kind of a passive-aggressive way to complain, but, you know, whatever. All right, you have one last question here. Let's see if you can get this right. There are all kinds of foosball tables available, including which of these? You can get one of these kinds of a foosball table. A one-to-one scale table in which the men on the rods are actual men. B, a FIFA-inspired version in which the little men can fake an injury by randomly detaching... from the rod at key moments, or see a, quote, hardcore version in which a goal results in a powerful electrical shock being sent to the opponent's hand.
I'm going with the flop, B.
You're
going
to go with the flop. Did they flop over? That would be great, but actually it's A, the one-to-one scale, real-life people. It's called human table football. It's a big inflatable field in which 10 people are strapped to poles and they try to kick the ball past each other. It's used as a corporate team building event, Coach, in case you want it for one of your practices. That might be
Wait, so real people are strapped to the bars?
Yeah, well, they're basically it's this huge thing. It's inflatable.
Can you spin them all the way around?
I
think that would be great. It'd be good, but no, they can't move, I think, is the fun. And they have to just kick the ball where they can reach it.
Oh, jeez.
How does this differ from stuff Caligula used to do?
I don't know. Carl, how did Coach Pete Carroll do in our quiz?
This is one time the coach was not a winner, Peter. No correct answers.
Pete Carroll is the new coach of the Seattle Seahawks. His new book on his philosophy is called Win Forever. It's in bookstores now. Pete Carroll, thank you so much for playing with us.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun. See you.
Take care. In just a minute, Carl will take credit for plugging the leak on the Deepwater Horizon. No, it's good news. It's good news. We're playing off that. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you from the week's news. Mo, in an effort to rid their society of Western customs, last week Iran began a crackdown on what?
Well, it's not going to be McDonald's or Starbucks. I mean, that's something. Can you give me a clue?
Yeah, well, basically, I was just going to wait till you ask. Basically, when Iran looks to the West, it sees Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh, they're eliminating Hannah Montana.
No.
Oh, well, because. They're eliminating achy, breaky hearts? No. Which would be lovely. No.
Well, what was Billy Ray known for?
He was known for, it was blue jeans and then... And
part of his look.
Blue jeans and was it sunglasses?
All business up front.
Mullet.
Yes. Iran has banned the mullet.
By the way, I love when this show turns into Password.
You know, the mullet hairstyle. Yeah. It's conservative cleric in the front, party in the back. It's it's welcome in Iran to know more. Offending haircuts will be removed with clippers, and any barbershop providing them will be shut down. This may be an important first step in welcoming Iran into the global community. On this one issue, Iran is now in agreement with everyone in the world except dudes with mullets.
It also completely eliminates the ongoing possibility that they might have gotten a NASCAR race.
That's true. It'll never happen now. The troubling thing here is that Iran is not so much cutting off Western influence, but cutting off the possibility of something we all hoped we'd someday see. Iranian rednecks. Imagine acid-washed denim veils. An Iranian Toby Keith singing, "I'm proud to hate an American." Or like a Muhammad Al-Foxworthy doing stand-up, making jokes like, "You know you're an Iranian redneck if you use the same stadium for monster trucks that you use for stoning adulterers." Charlie.
Yeah.
Scientists in Britain have been hard at work at cracking one of the mysteries of life. They finally figured it out. According to a paper published this week, they now know the answer to what perennial question?
This is a general question or a specifically British question?
No, it's a general question that people all over for centuries have tried to figure out, and they say they have solved it.
Let me see. What is, I mean, how much wood can a woodcut chuck wood?
You're close.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not.
Why do firemen wear red suspenders? No. Why did the chicken cross the road?
No.
Why did the guy walk into a bar with a duck in his head?
Chickens are involved.
Chickens are involved?
Chickens
Which
are
came
involved.
First, the chicken or the
exactly.
egg?
Exactly. They figured it out.
Boy, I surrounded that son of a gun, didn't
you
I?
You sure did.
I eliminated all the other suspects.
It eventually surrendered. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? It's been decided it's the chicken. Chicken wins. According to this groundbreaking research, eggshells can't be produced without a particular specialized protein, which is found in chickens' ovaries. So no ovaries, no eggshell. Therefore, the chicken came first. Problem solved. QED. But of course, you might say,
what did the chicken come out of?
Yes, at which point all the scientists said, from another chicken, it cloned itself. Shut up! The same team of researchers then went on to announce that a woodchuck could chuck about half a cord. The chicken crossed the road because it had a pressing appointment and it's none of your business. And when a tree falls in the forest with no one to hear it, it makes a kind of soft whooshing noise. And why? Because I said so.
That first egg must have been traumatic for that lady chicken.
Ah, what's that? I've never seen one of these things before in my life.
She must have thought she was passing a kidney stone or something.
The poor thing's trying to go over all the things she ate the previous day.
I know. It was Chinese last night.
Oh, I was so embarrassed. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play any of our games on the air, you can call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago or in Oklahoma City on September 23rd. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Hi, who's this?
It's Nicole.
Hey, Nicole.
Phoenix, Arizona.
There you are. I've been waiting for you to call, Nicole.
What? Yes, Nicole.
How are you?
I didn't just think it was going to be.
My God. How are you, Nicole?
I'm very good. I'm so excited to be on. And you know what? I have to say hi to Mo because I am partial. But you seriously. You seriously
heard
give
that
me...
before.
You give me so much laughter weekly.
Oh, God. Thanks, Nicole. It's a good day. This is really nice. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Nicole.
I know. I'm really throwing Charlie and Gary under the bus.
Nicole, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each of them. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right, here is your first limerick.
As I walk down the aisle to my hubby, I try to feel svelte and not schlubby. But I haven't lost weight, so my backdrop is great. I choose bridesmaids who are rather...
chubby.
Yes! According to a survey conducted in Britain, one in three brides admitted to asking only their fatter friends to be their bridesmaids so that they can look thinner by comparison.
That's horrible.
It is horrible, but it's true. So, ladies, it's up to you. It's either lose those 10 pounds before the wedding or meet your new bridesmaids, Michael Moore, John Goodman, and Santa.
I bet Santa gives good presents.
I bet he does. Here is your next limerick.
My friend takes off. He's really strutting. While I lag behind like smelly mutton. I'm simply not able, 'cause mine's a low navel. I'm slow with my low...
low-rise button?
Well, close. You're awfully close. Let's hear it again. I think you'll get it this time.
My friend takes off. He's really strutting. While I lag behind like smelly mutton. I'm simply not able, 'cause mine's a low navel. I'm slow with my low...
Oh, Nicole, look down.
But it rhymes?
Look down.
It rhymes with smelly mutton.
I know.
Look down past your top. Sorry.
My belly button.
Your belly button, yes. According to scientists at Duke University, the key to athletic prowess isn't strength, speed, discipline. It's the location of your belly button. The higher your navel, the higher your center of gravity. The higher your center of gravity, the better sports you are, certain sports. It's sad, though, because once this became revealed, athletes have already started surgical enhancements. Barry Bonds had his navel raised 4 inches. Lance Armstrong had his eliminated for aerodynamic purposes. Swimmer Michael Phelps had his put in the back of his head to use as a blowhole. Here is your last limerick.
Will and Grace may have set the fate trend, but Teen Vogue pushed it, now it may end. This summer's must have, not just on Fifth Ave, a fabulous snarky...
Snarky? Rhymes with may end.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fey trend.
I'm sorry.
How about...
It's not your straight enemy.
You make a fair point.
You can tell my priority.
Yeah, I know. It's your best gay friend. Gay friend.
I'm so nervous. My head is blank.
It's all right. Well, the answer is gay friend. According to Teen Vogue magazine, the quote, new must-have accessory for girls is a gay best friend, or rather a GBF.
Oh, my goodness.
This is not a new concept. GBFs have been a part of pop culture since the stars of Sex and the City were still alive. But now, it's happening in real life, though. After years of being shunned in the eyes of Teen Vogue, gay men have now risen to be the equal of expensive purses. What if you can't afford the new gay friend must-have accessory? Lest affluent kids will have to settle for a bi-curious friend. Carl, how did Nicole do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. 2 correct answers. That means Nicole is a winner.
Well done. Congratulations. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Charlie Pierce and Mo Rocca each has 3 points. Curie O'Connor has 2.
Okay. Curie, you're in third place. You'll go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Please fill in the blank. The Senate Judiciary Committee announced it would delay the vote of Supreme Court nominee blank until next week.
Elena Kagan.
Right. In a statement released this week, Blank announced that he'd undergone major heart surgery and was recuperating.
Dick Cheney.
Right. Anna Chapman had her British passport and citizenship revoked after recent revelations that she was a blank.
Russian spy.
Right. After her daughter Bristol announced her engagement to Levi Johnston, Blank praised her, quote, extraordinary belief in redemption and forgiveness.
Sarah Palin.
Right. After receiving complaints from concerned locals, police in Beatrice, Nebraska, ordered a local business to blank.
Stop selling smelly cheese.
No, dress up their naked mannequin. Angry over his move to Miami, workers in Cleveland removed an image of blank from a 10-story high billboard.
LeBron James.
Right. The YMCA announced on Monday that it was officially changing its name to blank.
The Y.
Right. An Australian man is recovering from injuries he received after he got drunk, climbed a fence, and tried to blank.
Ride a crocodile.
Indeed. The man was thrown out of a pub. Being too drunk, wasn't much else for him to do but climb the barbed wire fence at a nearby crocodile park and hop in the back of a 16-foot-long crocodile named Fatso. Remember, partiers, friends don't let friends drive crocodiles. Carl, how did Kiri do?
Kiri had a great round, Peter. 7 correct answers, 14 more points.
Well done!
16 points, and Kiri has the lead. Well done.
We flipped a coin. Charlie's elected to go last. So, Mo, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Agreeing to pay $550 million, the largest fine ever paid by a Wall Street firm, blank settled the suit filed against it by the SEC.
Goldman Sachs.
Right. The prosecution rested in the federal corruption trial against former Governor Blank this week.
Rod Blagojevich.
Right. The 19-year-old airplane thief known by the nickname The Blank was arrested in the Bahamas.
It's not. It's the barefoot bandit.
Right, it is. On Monday, the government of Switzerland refused to extradite Blank to the U.S. and so set him free.
Roman Polanski.
Right. In an ironic twist, a man in Britain was injured by a stray bullet while he blanked.
He was injured by a stray bullet while he was. It wouldn't be ironic if he was firing a gun. He was injured by a stray bullet while he that he had actually shot.
No, while he was attending an anti-violence barbecue.
Oh, okay.
French lawmakers voted this week to ban Muslim women from wearing blanks in public.
Headdresses. Burqas.
Yeah, the complete burqa. Yeah. A zoo in Madrid said it will do whatever it takes to adopt the octopus that predicted Spain's win in the blank?
The World Cup.
Right. Police investigating a car accident in Portland, Oregon, initially thought that the passengers were more severely injured than they really were because blank.
Because they were dead.
No. They were all dressed as zombies. Police arriving at the scene were horrified when passengers began lurching out of the car. Looking bloody, battered, and generally disgusting. Thankfully, the answer was simple. They were just zombies on the way to a party. Said one police officer, quote, "We're glad that everyone is alive despite being undead." Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, but Kiri still has the lead with 16.
All right, then. So how many, then, does Charlie need to win?
7 Ooh. Correct answers.
7. That's a lot. Here we go. All right, Charlie, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, the Senate approved a bill overhauling the blank system.
Financial regulation
right.
reform Wall Street.
Exactly. In a move that angered some shareholders, Hugh Hefner proposed making blank a private company.
Playboy Enterprises.
Right. After its test showed a hardware defect with the antenna, Consumer Reports announced that it could not recommend the blank.
The new iPhone.
Right, the iPhone 4. A federal judge began hearing arguments Thursday over whether Arizona's blank law should take effect.
The anti-immigration can we see your papers law.
Right. Meeting over drinks, a group of Yale University paleontologists decided to name a new species of dinosaur blank.
Skull and bones.
No, the Mojoceratops. Best known for his American Splendor series, comic book legend Blank died Monday at age 70.
Harvey Pekar.
Right. Officials say that the two mysterious animals in Texas thought to be blanks are most likely coyotes with mange.
Chupacabras.
Right. A British couple reported their cat to the police this week for blanking all over the neighborhood. To the police.
To the police.
For blanking.
For breaking into houses.
No, for stealing underwear.
What?
Owners Peter and Birgit Weissmantle of Southampton,
England. They gave up their own cat?
They did. They dropped a dime in the cat. They said their newly adopted 13-year-old cat, Oscar, had stolen more than 70 pairs of underwear from their neighbor's backyards. It's got to be an uncomfortable moment if you're a pet owner.
That's a great
look, Oscar's,
cat.
Oscar's been hunting again. What's that, Oscar? Is it a birdie? Is it a mouse? Oh, no. It's underpants. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
Charlie needed 7 correct answers. He had but 6 correct answers. So with 16 points, Curio
so
Connor
close.
Is this week's champion.
Well done, Curio.
Thank you.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that George Steinbrenner has left us and BP has hopefully capped the well, who is going to be our next big villain and why? Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer Philip Gotica, writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Siri Belusu. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Special thanks this week once again to our good friend Gary Yek. High five, by the way, to Sonia Archer for winning this week's Wait, Wait blog Name the Crime contest. You can get to our blog via npr.org/waitwait and see for yourself. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who will be our next big national villain and why? Charlie Pierce.
In his ongoing attempt at bipartisan government, Barack Obama will nominate himself.
Kerry O'Connor.
There are only 3 figures in American life we all still like. Sasha Obama, George Clooney, and the Geico Gecko. It's got to be one of them.
Mo Rocca.
The Miami Heat and their new recruits, Mel Gibson and Lindsay Lohan.
That's all you need.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Kerry O'Connor, and Charlie Pierce. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you right here next week.
This is NPR.